Reggie, as I've heard you talk, one thing kind of has coalesced in my brain in language that I wasn't really seeing before, and it's connected to this idea of you talking about church people or Christians not as you know, some kind of commodity in a sense, but as kingdom agents, as people who are engaging in a movement. And I think that the church is so uniquely positioned to be countercultural in this particular idea, because it is a part of the base theology of our belief that people are recognized with dignity in personhood, and they're not commodities. But maybe one of the problems we've had in the church in the past is that we've begun to treat people as commodities, just assets in our pews to accomplish some goal or task, rather than recognizing their humanity. So as you think about where the church is going, and you're unpacking kingdom for discipleship, how does that play into opportunities the church has in the future, you think?
You know, I want to comment on your, as you were setting that up, because you made some really important observations. You know, as a beginning place in evangelism, for instance, I think in the new world, or for spiritual conversations, I mean, we might call them evangelism, you know, to start with people's personhood, every human being created in the image of God. You know, I mean, when I was growing up, we started our evangelistic conversations with Genesis 3. You know, you're screwed up, and you know, you're going to go to hell and fry like sausage, you know, and you want some more good news. I've got more of that coming, as opposed to them, you are someone in the image of God. That's a whole new conversation. It's a different conversation. And you're right. I mean, this is a contribution of Christian thinking that is, it's stunning in the history of human development, human psychology, everything else. In fact, I even usually, in a kingdom way of getting into spiritual conversation, I'll often ask people, what are your hopes? What are your dreams? You know, because I think, and then they'll say something, well, you know, and I say, well, where do you think those come from? You know, I said, you know, if we just crawled up out of the ooze, you know, that's not how we got here. I mean, every human, if you were giving me your hopes, that's an echo of the kingdom of God. You believe in a better world and a better you, I think, because that's a kingdom idea that is in our brains, and it comes from having been dreamt up in the heart of God, because every human being is a dream. And living the dream is really living into your own skin. And that's what I think discipleship is. Helping people develop, live into their own skin is the way I say it.
Yeah.
But I think in the old days, you know, like day before yesterday, when we were so big on programming, church-centric stuff, and we were measuring our success by program numbers, I mean, you know, then yeah, we tended to look at, we just saw people as resources.
Yeah.
You know, and we asked, I mean, even pastors, we would ask each other, how's your Sunday school doing? How's your, you know, instead of how many better marriages do you have in your church this year, you know? Yeah. And how many people have a better outlook on life or whatever? And pastors look at me like I've got one eye in the middle of my head, you know, my forehead. So we don't know that. Well, why don't we know that? I mean, if people are married, do you think they care about that stuff?
Yeah.
You know, if they got kids, do they care about whether or not their relationship with their kids growing? Why don't we ask people questions, you know, instead of just, you know, participation questions? So when I think about moving from a program-driven, you know, discipling, you know, to a people development, which is what you're talking about, which is the business we're supposed to be in. And by the way, turning people into people is the hardest thing God has to do. I mean, sometimes I tell folks, I say, you know, if you don't become you, we're going to miss you because you're the only you we have. and you came straight out of the heart of the mind of God. But of course, I know people that have gone into ministry to keep from becoming people. I mean, you can hide out in plain view. Don't take that seriously, those of you who are ministers and listening to this. I have better hopes for you than that. But my point, I mean, God created the whole universe and took a day off, you know, in a week. He set aside all eternity to work on people. I mean, this is a big project. All right, people yeah. turning into people. So I think there's some, you know, some shifts that I think we've got to make. One is to move from the idea of just honoring participation into actually looking for maturation. You know, in a program-driven model, it was all about how many people supported it, were in our small groups, how many people came to recovery, how many people, you know, do 101 or whatever else. And really, our goal should be maturation. I think we've got to move, too, from standardized approaches to customized approaches to keep in line with the information revolution that's going on and how people want to be treated.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we're finally learning this in the public school, well, the school system, mm-hmm. you know, that every second grader is not at the same level. And the schools that are really taking off are those that are actually building curriculum around the student, as opposed to, I've got a curriculum and I'm going to take this kid and force him into it. We sometimes have a discipleship grid that's that way. Yeah. You know, this is what a disciple is, and we want to turn you into that.
Yeah, or to use your language from earlier, scorecard.
Yeah, exactly right. Yeah. You know, you need to come this much, give this much, whatever else. And another way of saying is, I think we need to move from a program model, which is scripted, into a people development model, which is all about shaping. See, I don't think people want us to script their journeys anymore, but they will allow us to shape their journeys. So basically that means then we move from a didactic approach to more of a discovery model in our discipling, more of a coaching, more of helping people understand what they know already but don't know they know. Or debrief, I guess the difference is from a delivery, like I'm going to teach you the truth, to more of a debriefing model, just pulling people out of it, helping them connect the dots in their own lives,
yeah.
so that, you know, their experience is meaningful to them, which starts with them rather than starting with, you know, a set of material that we want to. Some years ago, my wife, for instance, we were in touch with a family that was pretty needy in our community. There were birth of five babies all at once, all boys. You know, no fertility drugs. This is a very unusual occurrence. And they were in a tough part of town and didn't have a house that was fit for kids. And so a bunch of us got involved in it. Kathy was kind of leading the charge on it. And one afternoon she got a call from, you know, one of the, a lady in the, they did a little news story in our town. And so someone saw and they called Kathy and said, you know, I'd like to come help, you know, Susan, you know, take her out and mentor, you know, give her a day, an afternoon off and mentor her and all that kind of stuff. And just like this, Kathy said, why don't you come fold diapers? She said, because when Susan and I fold diapers together, we talk about everything. Hmm. And you see, that's a life-centric model versus a curriculum model.
Yeah.
You know, and it's based on the old, you know, let's take people out of their lives, let's teach them a bunch of stuff, and then send them back to plug and play. Are you kidding?
Yeah.
That's not how adults learn. That's not how adults hang on to stuff.
Yeah.
You know, and so our discipling methodology needs to come to grips with how people actually do learn the true truths that guide their lives and helping them think through their life at the points where they're ready for. I mean, when Susan folded diapers, Susan would bring up stuff that she was ready to learn about. Hmm. See, she was the one driving the learning instead of, today is lesson number 6 in our 12-week study. Here's the next thing you need to know. And I'm going, I could care less about lesson 6. I've got, now let me tell you what's going on in my brain right now. Well, why not start with your brain? Mm-hmm. Because that's the stuff that's sizzling and we need to pay attention to. But see, our current model just seems to me doesn't work for that because, again, we're classrooms. We know this is how Jesus developed people, put them in classrooms. This was clear in the scripture. And, you know, and then made guest appearances. I mean, all right, so another thing we got to move from is, and by the way, that's what I'm talking about is very labor intensive.
Yeah.
And this is why when I talk about it, pastors and the church leaders go, get this sigh, you know, and I'm saying, well, quit doing what you're doing so you can free up some time to do what I'm telling you. Create a a life coaching environment where people get actual help. Yeah. You can also, with the technology, you can load up so much stuff, information, you know, web delivery that's available 24/7. People, yeah. 3 a.m., I got a question. You know, I'm wrestling with whatever. And actually be helpful at 3 a.m. in the morning without them calling you.
I think, too, that with that, it's a model that Jesus showed us where we're taking the risk, right? When we enter into somebody else's life and we're finding engagement and investment with them, it's the same exact example of God sending his son to the midst of us where he assumed all the risk. And he joined us where we were and showed us how he intended our life to be. And so that there's a incarnational nature to what you're talking about in discipleship that's brilliant.
Great insight on your part. We'll switch chairs here. You know, but I'm a little tired of being shown up on the video by someone with greater insight. So if you'll just sit there and listen
okay,
to me.
Okay.
This is how I disciple people. Just shut up. I've got stuff to tell you. All right. Another thing, it seems to me, how many times have you heard the discussion about we're hoping to get so-and-so, you know, Susan and George plugged in?
Yeah.
The goal shouldn't be to plug them in. It should be to push them out. I mean, if we're developing viral kingdom, I understand the phrase, but look what that says behind it. You know, it's about turning them into, you know, I don't know, being assimilated by the Borg. I mean, you know, no one really wants that, but the church is good at doing it.
Yeah.
You know, some of the reasons I think a lot of people don't want to be church people or, you know, as they've seen their friends abducted by aliens. Anyway, so, and another thing that we tend to think in the current, in many discipling models, is we grow people into service. No, you grow people through service. And man, it's when we're serving other people that we learn the most about ourselves. We're challenged in our biases and our prejudices often. We're forced to learn quick, and now we're really truly a student. You know, just a bunch of stuff. If we need to get people deployed, you know, really quickly.
Yeah.
You know, send them out to screw up. I mean, this is what Jesus did, back to your, reference about how he went about this stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, the 70, when they went out and then he called them back in and debriefed that whole experience, his was a debriefing model too. What did you boys think I was talking about? Did y'all hear the story today? What do you think I meant by that? And, you know, you can just hear this. I'm saying, I don't know, we get up a crowd and all you do is tell stories. And, you know, I mean, the Pharisees, they do really good stuff, you know, verse by verse exegesis. You know, and I mean, so Jesus sends them out. They mess up. He pulls them back. We call down fire from heaven. You know, we saw save, you know, all this stuff. We ran into some people that weren't from our club. We told them to shut up. I mean, you know, so Jesus lets them unpack all of that, you know, craziness to move them. And he could have done a better job himself, but he risked the mission on people who were going to do it, you know, not do it as well. And I think in a paid clergy, professional Christian, you know, organizational stuff, we have disempowered people from, you know, failing fast and learning and growing that way.
Yeah.
I'll say one more thing and then I'll let you have better insight and close this out. But I think finally, to a lot of churches, I would say the old program model was so generationally siloed that it was instrumental, frankly, in hurting the transmission of spiritual truth from older generation to younger. I mean, the program model church, you could hit the church parking lot, split into, you know, your family stuff. The kids go here, the young people go here, not even have a shared experience sometimes, and come back in and there wasn't. So one of the things that COVID has done for, so obviously I'm arguing for a more generationally, an intergenerational discipling model where we're actually passing along truths, having guided spiritual conversations. And one of the things that the current pandemic has done is it's thrown some conversation back into the home. I'm telling every children's minister, every youth minister, your job doesn't change when they go. Your job is to help parents know how to have spiritual God conversations, not church conversations, because they're all participation. Did you enjoy this? You going into this year? You know, all that activity stuff. Actual God conversations with their own kids.
Yeah.
And so I think that's, so going back to a little bit of a home base for discipling is, and that's an intergenerational model. I think it's going to be really healthy for the church. So all of that's to say is we've got to make these micro shifts, and some of them are bigger than that, but we got to think through the ways that we develop people.
Yeah.
And I have some questions we need to ask ourselves about that, but we'll do that in the next segment while you sit there and listen like you've been doing. Such a great disciple.
I love that you're talking about intergenerational stuff. As a youth minister, it drove me nuts constantly when I was told, no, we hired you because you're young and so you're relevant to the kids. And like you, I started youth ministry at the age of 18, and I was in my first role as director of youth ministry at 19, and I had people in my youth group that were a year younger than me. And I kept telling people, no, I'm an idiot. I'm barely more experienced than these kids. I need you. I need your wisdom. I need you in here. And it was really hard to recruit people of older generations to interact because we've just trained people so long. We got to keep homogeny as much as possible.
We've disempowered people from their own life experience of what they know about their own lives that they've not put together because we've not let them.
Yeah.
And then that's further been a problem because then that life wisdom is not being passed along.
Yeah. And ultimately, I think our kids and young generations, what they love and what they care about is somebody who's interested in them, who's invested in them. They don't really care what you look like. They don't really care what your generation is or age. If you have investment in them, I think they learn that they can trust you because of that investment.
Relational discipleship or whatever I'm trying to say. I must be running for president. I can't speak. A relational base is the mentor base. Because that's all about relationship. You're exactly right. That's the weight limit on the bridge. What you can cart across is only as good as the weight limit on that relationship. And in fact, this is even true. A lot of people in churches, when I say, it was some of my clients were getting readers to go into the public schools, and sometimes they're called mentors depending on the program. They say, oh, I'm not a mentor. And I say, look, that 30 minutes that you give that kid, totally focused on them in that week, that's the only 30 minutes they probably have all week where someone is positively, totally focused on them. Hmm. And that establishes a relationship that you then become a mentor just by virtue of that position, of that relational strength. Hmm. Yeah, you're right. Yeah. It's kind of interesting. We've just kind of adopted like a curricular school model for, and getting information by itself. I mean, we've never had a more nutritionally aware group of Americans than we've got right now. I mean, I can read the side panels of cereal boxes with a fair degree of understanding, trans fats and sugars and stuff. And I still reach for the Krispy Kreme instead of the pine bark or whatever it is that I should be having for breakfast. I mean, that information doesn't change me.
Yeah.
You know, it requires something else. Yeah. I don't know what it is. I'm not willing to find out yet.